We spent the first part of the hour talking with reps from Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon about the services the organization provides and the nearly constant controversy over the delivery of abortion services. The frequent critics include organizations like Oregon Right to Life. Members are buoyed by the current political arrangement in Washington, arrayed against public funds for Planned Parenthood. Brian Platt is a Medford-based volunteer for Oregon Right to Life and a member of the state board as well. And a guest in the studio with me, Brian. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
I noticed that Oregon Right to Life existed even before the Roe versus Wade decision legalizing abortion. What got it started?
Yeah, no, I don't have an answer for that, Jeff. But, you know, they were very early in the curve and continue to actually be one of the leading state organizations in relation to meetings with other chapters at national conventions and whatnot. We're really one of the five most active state organizations in the country.
So rather than have me describe what you do, because it seems like you can mention a group's name like Planned Parenthood, like Right to Life, and immediately raise hackles among some people, what do you think? What do you perceive to be the purpose of Oregon Right to Life?
Well, I mean, the purpose is to advocate for human life. And probably where we disagree in large part is that we believe life begins at conception. There's no biologically another point in the development of a human being from conception to natural death. So our mission then is to advocate for human life from natural conception to natural death.
Has it ever been discussed about what represents conception? One cell,
there are many different perspectives on that, but if you go into embryology books, in fact, amongst all of my resources I brought here is a sheet from Princeton University with three pages of texts that talk about the fact that the human life begins biologically. It begins at conception, and there's no other point in the continuum of life where it can really begin. There's no other specific point. There are people that advocate that it's once implantation begins. I mean, there are some variations, but from our purposes, biologically, human life begins at conception. And at that point in time, it's entitled to all of the legal protections that you and I are obligated or available to us.
So human beings, once the egg is hardened?
Once the egg is fertilized, That's correct.
Hmm. In a perfect world, then, what would happen to the practice of abortion?
Well, in a perfect world,
abortion
would be illegal. And that certainly is one of our missions in life, is to see that happen.
Would it happen under any circumstances?
It would happen
even
under
a woman's life?
It would happen under any circumstance.
That's
a sticky wicket, uh-huh. Jeff. So here is how here's my take on that is – obviously, it's an extremely rare thing. In fact, C. Everett Koop was a pediatric surgeon, I believe, and Surgeon General of the United States under Ronald Reagan said in his 30 years of practice, there was never one single case where it would have saved a woman's life to take her unborn child. So putting the life of the mother in perspective with respect to abortion, it's a pretty, sketchy thing. But having said that, we would look at this, I think, akin, the best analogy I can give you is in a car accident where you have two people trapped inside of a vehicle and the first responders are there. They would never ethically kill one intentionally to save another. Their goal arriving at that crash site would be to save both people. If it should happen that in that process decisions are made where, regrettably one person perhaps would pass away in the process of extraction, it's regrettable, but it happened. But that would be our position on it.
You use the word kill in relation to the example of the car accident, but is that what you see happening in abortion,
yes,
killing a human being?
Yes, there's absolutely no doubt about it. It's taking the life of another human being.
So aside from supporting babies being born, I mean, what is Oregon Right to Life and maybe your personal, if you need to divide between them, if you need to say that, just let me know. But what's the position on contraceptive or things to keep people from getting
right
to a place of conception in the first place?
No, fair question. So Oregon Right to Life takes no – this is another kind of a challenge for us is there are so many peripheral issues surrounding the right to life that it's easy to get off on rabbit trails. But Oregon Right to Life takes no position on contraceptives. Having said that, any method that takes the life of a fertilized egg is considered an abortion, whether it's a medical abortion, whether it's a surgical abortion. So the end result is any process that takes that human life, we would oppose. But there's no specific position on contraceptives.
wouldn't it help the situation, you think, to support contraception or something else to prevent conception? I mean, if the issue for you is that life begins at conception and you want to stop seeing pregnancies terminated after conception, I mean, wouldn't you want to have fewer conceptions going on?
Okay, so I'll take my Oregon Right to Life hat off.
All right.
Okay, now it's a Brian Platt hat. Okay, so when you purchase, I don't, but when a lady purchases a month's supply of contraceptives, typically on the box there's a phrase or a section on there called mechanisms of action. And there are contraceptives, and there's a lot of dispute about this even within the medical community. But one of the methods of action of a contraceptive pill is it resists the ability of a fertilized egg to implant in the womb. If that's the case, that is something that I would personally oppose.
So the birth control pill itself?
Itself, the birth control pill itself. It's one of several mechanisms of action, and the different pills have different levels of hormones and things. I mean, it's not a cut and dry thing. And like I say, even within the pro-life community, in the medical community, there's disagreement about exactly how this works. I think it's one of the reasons Oregon Right to Life officially will not take a position on that. But that is one of the listed mechanisms of action of contraceptives.
Well, so since you had to take off the Oregon Right to Life hat and just go with the Brian Platt view, I mean, has there been a fairly brisk discussion within Oregon Right to Life about taking a stance?
You know, I'd have to say, actually, no. It's not one that we dwell on. You know, honestly, at a board meeting, there are so many issues that are more germane or more pertinent to the news of the day and whatnot. Contraceptives, I would say, probably have taken a back burner for us with respect to discussion or even development of a change in policy or anything like that. So, yeah, it's not a big priority at this point in time.
Brian Platt lives in the Medford area where he's a volunteer for Oregon Right to Life. He's also a member of the state board. You can join our discussion as we talk about Oregon Right to Life, which it turns out is not just about beginning of life, but end of life as well. We'll get into that a bit. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. We can take emails as well at jx@jeffnet.org. I guess since you've described your feelings about the pill, I don't need to ask about the morning after pill.
Yeah, morning after pill is clearly the potential, again, is as an abortifacient. That's right.
So how is Oregon Right to Life feeling about the moves in other states under the new Congress to defund women's health care?
Well, frankly, we're excited about it. You know, listening to the gals that were on, you know, and all due respect to them, and they're committed. I mean, there are so many sincerely committed people. There's absolutely no doubt about that. If we could take abortion off of their agenda, they would be as accepted in the community from my perspective, and I think I can speak for Oregon Right to Life on this, as any other, you know, family planning organization. It's the abortion that's the issue with them. As long as they're killing human beings, it's just not okay.
Should Planned Parenthood end up with less money? And from what you're saying, it sounds like you heard a good bit of the earlier discussion. What do you see happening to family planning services, especially for people who don't make a lot
of
money?
You know, she alluded to a study that came out, which was basically just an accounting of the number of federally qualified health centers that are available in the United States. And I'll show you, obviously we're not on television, but there's the graph, Jeff. And for Planned Parenthood to suggest that if we lose the services of 665 clinics, which actually is not going to happen, even if all the Title X money is taken away, that over 13,000 other facilities would be unable to cope with the transition of the input of new clients, say, so to speak, seems to me to be ludicrous.
All right, and what you're showing me here, though, is it gets down to one line here. There are 20 community health clinics for every Planned Parenthood.
That's right. In the state of Oregon, 11 Planned Parenthood clinics that perform abortions, 232 or 237 other clinics that could take those clients.
But
don't perform abortions.
But do they have the capacity?
I think numerically, I don't, and I'm not going to suggest that it would be seamless. Obviously, anytime you're given the opportunity to take on new clientele and you're not prepared for it, you're going to have to make some adjustments in how your operating hours, the size of your facility, whatever services you offer. But to suggest that if Planned Parenthood loses their funding, that there's just going to be leaving people by the millions out on the street with nowhere to go isn't a realistic view.
So what do you think should happen when a woman has an unplanned pregnancy?
Well, I would probably digress and say there needs to be planning prior to the act that creates a pregnancy.
And but there can be that planning and still.
And even with contraceptives, which are notorious for failure, there is. So there's no such thing as an unwanted child in this country, Jeff. There are millions of people, including my daughter and son-in-law, that are waiting to adopt a child because they have their own issues with respect to childbearing. There is no such thing as an unwanted child in the United States.
All right, so you're saying that adoption is normally the pathway here?
Adoption would be if a woman is put in a position where she's, at this point in time, legally required to allow the maturation process and she gives birth, then if she's incapable, unwilling, whatever the case might be, to keep the child, adoption is the option.
It doesn't seem to happen very often, though, because the figures I looked at indicate that somewhere between 2% and 4% of children born outside of marriage are put up for adoption.
So I guess that how I would respond to that then is that once the woman goes through that process and actually bears her child, that maternal instinct perhaps takes over, and all of a sudden the unwanted child's not so unwanted anymore.
Let's take some calls, grab your headphones.
Sure.
Let's go to John in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Brian Platt of Oregon Right to Life.
Hi, is this me?
Yeah.
Okay, I have two questions, if I may, Jeff. Number one, when is the last time that he personally has provided the $245,340 that it is estimated for a child from birth to age 18 takes in a middle-class family? When is the last time he has produced that $245,000? My second question, if I may, is he aware that his hubristic status is really puzzling? If God herself chooses to spontaneously abort between 10 and 20% of all known pregnancies, how is he so more all-knowing than God herself that he insists that everybody carry their pregnancy to term?
Let's find out, John. Thanks for the question. So it sounds like you have children.
Let's take the second one first.
Our
policy is natural conception to natural death. If a child spontaneously aborts, that's part of a natural process. It's unfortunate. Obviously, there's not easy answers to a lot of these questions, but a natural spontaneous abortion is part of life. It happens. It's an unfortunate thing. Again, we've experienced that in our family. With respect to the first, I see no way to put myself in a position where somehow all of a sudden I'm responsible for the raising of a child because I support the Right to Life movement any more than you perhaps are responsible for the well-being of 300,000 elephants in Africa because you might be a animal rights activist. There's no logical correlation there. The fact is that a human life doesn't have a United States dollar value. All life is precious, and it needs to be protected from natural conception till natural death.
Well, and this is where the other part of the question comes in, and let me expand a bit, because Joyce, no town given, emailed in and asks, what is Right to Life doing to support women who choose to complete their pregnancy? Do they help women? And it is a frequent knock on the Right to Life movement that you're really concerned about making sure that children get born. But What kinds of things do you approve of in terms of support for families, support for unwed mothers, whoever, once children are actually born?
Well, again, our mission is to ensure that human beings have the right to life. It ends, and again, this is one of those peripheral things, the organization's responsibility is supporting and encouraging life. Beyond that point, responses would be, if we have a choice between making sure that a human being lives and making sure that a human being has 3 square meals a day, we're going to start with the human being living. Our mission is not support beyond that. Having said that, our local chapter, just so that folks know, actually does make financial contributions to a couple of different organizations in the Valley who very much are in tune to post-pregnancy responsibility for the well-being, particularly because we have so many single moms that are in financially difficult situations. So our local chapter actually does support a couple of local organizations that take care of moms, single unwed moms that are taking care of newborns. Yeah.
That's the local chapter, but it sounds like from what you're saying, the official position of Oregon Right to Life is essentially binary.
It has no position beyond that. Again, it's a rabbit trail with no end. It's not what our mission statement is any more than any other organization is responsible for some peripheral, you know, issue that's a peripheral issue. That's all it is. So, yeah.
Life on, life off.
Yep.
Okay. So, which gets us at the end of life, and you mentioned establish the protection for innocent human life from conception to natural death. So what sorts of things? So I assume this means that you're not for the death with dignity laws, assisted suicide.
No, absolutely. Absolutely opposed it. Natural death is natural death. Again, you know, personally, take my Oregon Right to Life hat off. I have a 93-year-old mom that we're struggling with right now, these very same things. She wonders why the Lord hasn't taken her home, and there isn't an easy answer for that, Jeff. But the fact is that human governments have no business involving themselves in cutting human life short. When that happens, we get the old slippery slope argument, and we're seeing that more and more manifest itself, particularly in Europe with the Dutch and how they're now involuntarily euthanizing elderly people and children.
Involuntarily? I mean, there are people who can be, you know, they're depressed, they want to die.
Involuntarily. In fact, if you read on it on the internet, apparently it's even more profound than that. They now have it where children have their own ability autonomously from their parents to make a decision to end their own lives. And that's the slippery slope. I'm frankly a little surprised that Oregon hasn't gone down that trail more rapidly than we have. But it's once the line is crossed, the slippery slope begins.
I'll have to research that one myself. Couple seconds left here. If abortion is made harder to get, does it then turn to back alley abortions?
Back alley abortion is another kind of a myth, an urban myth. First of all, the number of maternal deaths from illegal back alley abortions was greatly exaggerated, and even Alan Guttmacher, you know, will attest to that.
Okay. We are out of time. Brian Platt is in the Medford area and is a volunteer with Oregon Right to Life for the chapter down here and is a member of the state board as well. Thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson
Exchange. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time.